Before we get into this hour-long video of allegedly true small-town stories, I have a quick book to tell you all about. As all of you probably know, I am a big fan of horror stories. Recently, I came across a new horror series written by author Michael Wellen. It's called Within the Walls, and it's one heck of a thrilling story. To give you a quick summary, Paul had recently lost his vision due to an awful tragedy. He and his mother move into a run-down apartment building that seems friendly and warm. Little did Paul and his mother know, there would be a string of brutal murders that get worse and worse. Suddenly, Paul hears something coming from the walls. Get your copy of Within the Walls by Michael Wellen now. Use the link in the description below to get it for only $2.50. Now, let's get into these subscribers' allegedly true stories that just can't be explained. I live in eastern Tennessee with our husband and three dogs. We live in a lakeside home in Greenback. If you are familiar with the area, you have likely heard of Hope Castle. The castle is about a 2-minute hike through the woods from my place. The story I'm about to tell isn't recent and is from a time before the castle was open to the general populace. It was early in the year 2000 and the night was cold. I was unable to sleep, so I took Freddy, my English Mastiff, for a walk in the woods. Keep in mind, he's about 200 pounds. We were walking by a little creek near the castle when I heard howling, closer to a cry in truth, in the distance. This was the point where my dog began acting nervous, which is highly unlike him. I saw a crack in the castle wall, and upon entering it, I was overtaken with a smell of rust and iron. The smell was bad enough it made my eyes water. I began walking around, searching for the source of the awful smell, at which point I entered a room with light. The source of light was 3 tea-light candles in the room. I found an 8-foot-tall half-human, half-dog-looking creature. The creature smelled of death, and I immediately turned to run, but behind me, I could hear the creature screeching my name. The sound was terrifying. I tried running again, but my dog just wouldn't move. The creature ran toward us, at which point Freddy lunged at it. He tried latching onto the creature's chest. However, the creature threw Freddy at me. It was at this point, Freddy got up and began running with me. Behind us, I could still hear the creature screeching my name. This continued as I ran all the way home, until, finally, I slammed the door behind me, and the creature's screams and screeches suddenly fell silent. Examining my brave Freddy, I noticed he had 3 claw marks in the side of his breast. I took Freddy to the vet, and they had to euthanize him. By morning, he had black mold growing inside his wounds. Yes, you heard that right. Black mold. Shortly after this, we cremated Freddy and took his ashes to his favorite lake. 19 years later, I opened my window and heard the screeches of that creature again. The next morning, I looked at my house to find 3 claw marks across the front door. And now, I'm really not sure what to do. I haven't heard it or seen any more scratches since then. I live in Leavenworth, Kansas, and my story starts like this. I'd been watching creepypasta videos for 2 or 3 weeks and was on a skinwalker kick, which was natural as my mother is noticeably Native American, and my siblings and I have Native American in us as well. I'm driving my brother to work when I make a turn down a road shortly after sunset and notice, far off in the distance, an outline in the woods. I didn't focus too much on it and brushed it off. On the way back, I took the same way home. Everything is chill. Later on, when I need to pick my brother up again, on the way home, I notice an outline in the woods again. This time, however, it is more dog-like in shape. When we're about 300 yards away from the creature, I quickly identify it as a coyote. I start to become overcome with a shakiness akin to the kind when you're hunting I'm an experienced and self-taught hunter, and the animal you've been chasing is within killing sight. At about 100 yards from the creature, it comes out, tail tucked between its legs, trotting towards us. About 40 to 50 yards away, something just seems incredibly off. I noticed. I can see its eyes, as though it were daylight, and they were completely black. As we were moving past the creature, it just stands there, staring at us with this weird and menacing look. The stare was weird. It was as if it was looking inside of us. I had already passed the creature and was roughly 100 yards away again when I stopped. The creature was still there staring at us. I pulled a U-turn when the thing trotted off in the other direction, still staring, as though it wanted us to follow it. We drive at a dead-end street with another patch of woods. We were turning right to follow the creature when it vanished. I was going to hop out and check what was up, but my brother, who had an extremely bad feeling, told me not to. We left after this quickly. I'm not sure what was up, but I don't let it stop me from enjoying hunting or the wilderness. Maybe the thing was just messing with us. Maybe it was up to something sinister. I'll likely never know. I'm a maintenance technician for a residential property in Colorado, and I'm also Native American. I live in a very urban area near a wooded area from my city, so part of my job is to handle emergency calls after hours when all hits the fan. Anyway, I go on call, and the first few nights were really quiet. This would change one night around 2:30 in the morning when I got an emergency call for a hot water heater leaking. I responded quickly as I live on the property, so it doesn't take me too long to head over. The caller ended up having to replace a hot water heater, so I started walking to our shed where we keep spare part heaters. When, all of a sudden, I see this huge dog-like thing, just glaring at me from 30 feet away. It had these very yellow eyes, and I make sure I know where this dog is, as I'm solo on the job. While I'm loading up the hot water onto a dolly, I notice this dog kinda looks disfigured. It's about 20 feet from me, and it starts making these noises I've never heard before. I start to get a little nervous, but I continue doing my job, so I'm walking the water heater over the dolly across the property, and I have the feeling I'm being watched. I start to hear the sounds of hoofs on the road, when I look behind me, and this dog has these horse-like hoofs. I end up freaking out, drop the hot water heater, and flee into a vacant unit. I make sure the unit is secure, all doors and windows are locked, etc. I pull out my knife and flashlight. I try to take up a tactical position in this vacant unit and remain as quiet as I can. I stay in this position for about 2 minutes, just listening when I start to hear these hoofs outside the window. I start thinking about how I can withdraw from this situation when I hear this tapping on the window, which soon starts to get louder as it goes on. All of a sudden, it just randomly gets cold in this vacant unit. I was able to see my breath in the unit, so I turn the heat on early in the day to 68 degrees. This is when I realize there is a patio door that leads to the main road. I move quickly, open the door, and book it as fast as I can out of the unit. I'm running as fast as I can, and I can hear these hooves running right behind me. They are gaining on me at this point, and I'm in full flight mode. This thing starts to make these horrible noises as it tries to get me, and I'm trying to think so hard of where I can get that is safe. I decided to try and make it to our maintenance office, as it has power tools I believe I could use to defend myself with. Unfortunately, I didn't make it to the maintenance office. I end up literally running into a passing squad car responding to a noise complaint. The cop jumps out and asks me if I'm okay, and at this point, I'm out of breath. That's when, from the wooded area, we hear this bloody scream. The cop radios in for additional cars to respond, and I tell the officer exactly what had happened. She looks at me with this look that I could tell that she thought I was crazy. I told her to follow me to the fake unit, though, and I'd show her the imprint in the dirt. She does this and her mouth hits the floor when she sees the print. About six or more squad cars respond and they end up going through the wooded area, but they come up dry. They don't find anything, but every once in a while, when I'm out on work orders or just smoking a cigarette, I get this feeling like something is watching me, and the hairs stand up on the back of my neck.
Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This only happened less than an hour ago, and I still feel pretty creeped out by the whole thing, so I'll keep this as short as possible. A dude followed me around the supermarket, blatantly stared at me on several occasions and stood right behind me in my personal space in the line for the self-serve checkouts. He then collected his coins and items one by one when he finished checking out at the register right beside mine, before me, and then waited out front with a friend, another male he was also shopping with but separately. This meant I had to walk past them and get into my car before they started walking off. As I was reversing out, but had to stop to let passing traffic by, a third younger male walked up beside my vehicle and stood next to my window waving, smiling. He had brown rotten front teeth, and saying something I couldn't understand. I waved back, damn desire to be polite, but I didn't wind down my window and reversed out as calmly as I could manage. As I drove out of the car park, walked to the other side, and stood by my car again as I drove out. Feeling spooked, I drove to another supermarket and sat in their car park for about 10 minutes. I then went inside and did another small grocery shop there. Different supermarkets equal different sales, we all know the gist. When I finished, I packed up my car and began to drive off only to see the man who approached my car standing opposite to the store. He ran over to the other male, literally ran, who had a hoodie on, with the hood up, grabbed his phone off of him, and began speedily what I can only assume was texting on the phone as I drove past him. I took a weird route home in an attempt to make sure no one was driving behind me, for the last few turns anyway, but I still feel gross. When I checked my car, I noticed that one of my tires had a small centerpiece of the hubcap was missing. I'm hoping it just fell off at some point and I didn't notice. I'll go back to work tomorrow. Mondays, am I right? And we have to park on that street. My place of work is 1-2 blocks from those supermarkets. I live in a tiny rural town, so I'm not feeling excited about the idea. Being raised by a police officer, my gut instinct is usually pretty spot on, and this whole incident left me feeling pretty gross. I don't know about you guys, but it really freaked me out.
Alright, so this occurred roughly about 2 years ago, around August 2014. My husband, whose nickname is Skeeter, and I had just moved down to a small town in Nevada from the bustling city of Los Angeles, California. For safety and practicality purposes, I will not disclose the exact location of our residence, but I will say the area's population is definitely below 900 people. We'd moved just shortly after the birth of our son, having decided that the small-town life was for us, a young couple and young parents. We'd moved just shortly after the birth of our son, having decided that the small-town life was for us as a young couple and young parents. Jobs are easier to come by, the pace is slower, expenses are reduced, and it would be the perfect place to raise our family. Surprisingly,
The only concern I'd had about the place was the fact that everything was so spaced out, with the nearest house being a little over a mile away. In case of an emergency, my neighbors could be of little to no assistance. Skeeter, however, had no qualms about this as he was a rather private person, and the idea of slight seclusion didn't particularly bother him. We moved on a hot summer day. Now, in this incident, we had only been in town for maybe 2 weeks and were still settling in. It was a warm Friday night, somewhere around 11 p.m., and my husband was in the town working security at the bank. Our son, Julius, was only 3 weeks old and very colicky, and on this night he was just inconsolable. No matter what I did, he wailed his little lungs out. I was stumped for what to do, so I decided to walk with him and around in circles. Sometimes, if that didn't work, I would even take him on car rides, and those always seemed to soothe him. I would have driven the baby around in the car, but Skeeter drove himself to work that night, and we only had one vehicle between us. I should mention we have two dogs, a 2-year-old German Shepherd named Titus and a 4-year-old Maltese Dasha. I figured they would need a walk before I managed to calm Julius down, and we all turned in for the night. One thing about Dasha and Titus is that they are very overprotective of me and the baby, and will raise the alarm at the smallest of threats. It made me feel safe walking alone outside in the pitch dark with my newborn, miles away from any other human beings in the security of my husband. I threw on their leashes and strapped the bawling Julius to my chest, heading out the back door and making sure my keys and phone were in my pocket. There's a winding, unpaved trail that's just a few feet from the left of our back porch and leads into a thatch of trees. It's about a 10-minute walk down, but I wasn't afraid due to the fact that I'd grown up taking hikes in the Topanga Canyon and going on camping trips in the Big Bear as a kid. The walking seemed to do the trick as within a few minutes the baby quieted down and my dogs finally relaxed. They were always tense when Julius was fussing. I was just about to pass the wild shrubbery and tall grass that you see right before you get to the first when I felt resistance on the other end of the leads. I glanced back at Dasha and Titus, who were paused and looking off right up the path at full attention. As a mother and female, this, of course, made me very paranoid, and I gently tried to coax them to keep walking. Both took a few steps, but Dasha stopped again, and I could see her fur standing on end. Titus began to growl, which freaked me out because he was the more docile of the two, and I'd rarely ever heard him growl. This time, I hissed my command and they hesitantly moved forward. At this point, I was beyond petrified as I had no idea what the hell was out there and causing my dogs to go crazy. Even if I did, what the hell could I do with a baby, two dogs, and no protection? I decided to turn around and go home. Forget this whole situation, right? Wrong. We had been heading southwest, back in the opposite direction that we had come for about 2 minutes, when a figure stepped onto the weathered path. Literally, there are no words to describe the icy, potent fear that went through my veins at that small figure just a few feet in front of me. I'm about 5'2", give or take, and this person, or whatever the hell it was, is several inches shorter than me, maybe about the height of an average 10-year-old. The creepiest part is that this thing had on a pig mask with a mouth crudely carved into a crooked smile and smears of dark liquid all over the face. I don't think it was blood, but I digress. We're just standing there, staring at each other for what was about 30 seconds when all of a sudden, Dasha and Titus launched themselves at this pigman, snarling and snapping at him aggressively. It was almost rabid, and it should have scared a normal person, but it didn't seem to scare him. This pigman, which is what I'll be calling it from now on, looks down at my dogs in an almost curious fashion, and I'm thanking God that the leashes are keeping them from seriously wounding this individual. I'm also trying to think of how to get myself out of this situation without freaking out. To my surprise and happiness, the baby hadn't gotten scared and started crying from all the ruckus, and was just cooing softly. This pigman finally seemed to notice my baby on my chest, and I guess hatched some type of morals. It made a weird sort of wailing sound and darted back to the way it came. I hear it disturbing the grass as it walked further into the wild greenery. I didn't wait to see anything else from or about it and noped the hell out of there, hauling my ass all the way home. It's true what they say about adrenaline. It makes you do some amazing things. Here I am still recovering from childbirth, with a baby strapped to my chest and two dogs, and I'm on a full sprint through the almost pitch-black darkness. I'm surprised that I didn't trip or hurt myself. The usual 10-minute walk only took about 3, and when I got home, I double-locked the doors, closed all the windows and curtains, and waited for my husband to get home. Titus and Dasha are troopers, my little saviors, and I thank God for them protecting my family. I would have never known that thing was there until it was too late, and if it had not been for them, I don't know how things would have turned out. They got extra love and treats for months after that, and to this day, I never go outside alone, especially at night. I don't know who or what the hell that pig-masked freak was, but I'm just glad I got my dogs, my baby, and myself away from it. Obligatory backstory. I live in a tiny northern Kentucky town. When I say tiny, I legitimately mean microscopic. It's a nice neighborhood, if a little stereotypically southern, to be honest. It's got a low crime rate, and everyone knows everyone. Lots of fundamentalists, lots of pickup trucks. Not my particular cup of tea as an adult, but on the whole, it seemed like a very safe place to grow up. You walk to school because there are no school buses. The city is so small, you can get from the end to the other in about 20 minutes on foot. Big football town, though. Not much else to do, really. The biggest points of interest are the church, the football field, and the Kroger. This happened to me when I was 16 years old. It was a typical Friday night, and I was home watching and hanging out with my brother, who was about 9 years old at the time. We recently had new neighbors move in next door, and their son, Austin, was my brother's age. They became best friends pretty much immediately. There's always a football game on Friday nights in season, and the whole town is there. I wasn't partial to the games. Once I had seen one, honestly, I'd seen them all. I would still occasionally walk down to the field and meet up with buddies to do something after, but that was about the extent of it. The phone rings and my brother answers it. I'm quite sure we were playing a video game of some kind around that time. I'm fairly sure it was probably Super Smash Bros. Melee on the old GameCube. He was intimidatingly good for his age, and we had a nice sibling rivalry going on. He always played with Roy while I used Marth. These matches were absolute nail-biters. He hangs up and tells me Austin is at the game with his folks, and he asks if we can please go down and get him. I didn't want to be down there in a huge crowd of sweaty rednecks, and I told him so. His mom says he can't walk home without us. He wants to come home and hang out, and we can do a 3-person tournament. After much begging and pleading, I finally say, okay, let's go. It's a 10-minute walk maximum, and at least we wouldn't have to stay. We'll go down and grab Austin, and then we're noping it back here to play some Melee. We head up our dead-end street, hang a left, and start down the main road. The sports complex is on this road. It's just at the bottom of a hill. It was about twilight, and from the top of the hill we could already hear the marching band and the cheering. I didn't see many folks around, but nothing looked unusual. I really didn't expect to see anyone. Pretty much everyone was down at the game. Looking ahead, I could see cars parked lining the street, with the bulk of them right by the turnoff of the sports complex. He's doing the typical kid brother thing as we walked. Hey Jen, do you know owls can turn their heads almost completely around? Hey Jen, I and Dawson had a shoe throwing contest, and my shoe went so far I almost couldn't see it anymore. Hey Jen, look at this flower, it's awesome. At about the halfway mark, I see a gold SUV pull up across the street, just opposite of where we were walking. It sits for about 10, maybe 15 seconds, and then a man gets out, just as we are passing by so that he's behind us. He's an older guy, in his mid-40s if I had to guess. In retrospect, he screamed creeper. Weasel face, tall and wiry. He had this weird smile or sneer, I guess you would call it. At the time, however, I didn't think twice. Of course, just a guy going to the game, probably meeting up with his family. My brother was on my left, and I was on the right. We keep walking normally. After about 30 or so seconds, I hear shuffling. I turn around out of reflex just to glance at what's going on. This guy is gaining on us. Okay, no big deal. He's probably just trying not to miss anything. He'll probably walk right on past. I would have loved to keep a brisker pace myself, but I had the kid brother in tow, and his 9-year-old legs just couldn't handle speed walking. We keep going as usual, but now I have made a mental note. A little more time goes by, maybe a minute, and I start thinking, wonder why he hasn't breezed on by us. The guy sure looked like he was in a hurry, so I turn around again. This man is right behind us. I mean, close enough for me to see the creepiest smile or sneer I've ever seen on his face. Only he wasn't behind us per se, he was directly behind my brother. And when I happened to glance back, he had his arms out in front of him, like he was trying to reach for my brother, and almost had a hold of his upper right arm. I caught this guy nearly in mid-snatch. I reached out my left hand and put it around my brother's back. Probably 5 seconds went by, but it felt like a lot longer than that. After I had my arm barrier, I do a quick scan of the street. There is no one else around, no witnesses, no help. I'm only 16 and this guy's a lot bigger than me, so what the hell am I gonna do? I lean down and say as quietly and as calmly as I can, "Come on, Ross, let's get there. I bet I can go faster than you." I start to speed walk and so does my brother. I have my arm around his back and I'm half pushing him, rushing him along as fast as he can. I see the sports complex and it's just down the hill. We are about a minute or so away at most. After about another 30 seconds or so, I'm not quite sure, the whole thing seemed to go by in slow-mo. I turned around, and this guy is speed-walking too. He's matching our pace to keep right behind my brother, and he's gaining again. Now I really start to panic. He's really after us. There's no other explanation now. I don't know him, and I almost caught him grabbing the kid. Now he's almost in grabbing distance again. He's picking up speed, and he's smiling. Well, sneering. It was a predatory look if I've ever seen one. I turn back around and I see we are so close to the stadium, so freaking close. If we can just get down there a little more, the property opens up and there will be people everywhere. I have to get down to all those people, right now. I try to sound calm, but I'm sure I didn't at this point. "Let's run, Ross, come on, I'll race ya." We take off running and I'm looking more at him, that he's ahead of me now, which makes me feel better. I'm trying to keep him in my sight the entire time. He thinks it's a game. He smiled and started running his little heart out. I remember feeling a tiny speck of relief. Oh good, he doesn't know he's about to get raped and murdered. He's running pretty fast though. He's in it to win it. I see the entrance of the stadium and I think we gotta be home free by now. I turn around and this guy is running after us. It was one of the scariest moments of my life. I knew that beyond a shadow of a doubt that this guy is only running to catch us. Well, not us per se, but my brother. He started to gain, but he's not close enough yet. I whip back around and sped up to my personal max speed, and of course, the kid pumps his own. Once again, I'm looking directly at him, more than the street in front of me, so I can't be sure he's still there with me. I hear this thuds on the pavement, and now I know he's getting close, and my heart was sending electrical currents of fear to the rest of my body. And just as I heard him coming up right behind us, we hit the stadium grounds. It was a sharp left turn and bam, people. There were people everywhere. It was halftime and the adults were out in the entrance area smoking and talking. The view of the entranceway and all the people were obscured by a stone archway on the street, marking the stadium grounds. I had never been so happy to see a bunch of sweaty rednecks in all my life. The guy came right behind. And the second he turned the corner after I saw the people and he panicked. I could see the surprise and fear in his eyes. I had turned around at that moment to see where he was and I looked right at him and locked eyes with him in this beautiful moment. He looked at everyone, looked at me, looked at my brother, and walked away, back the way we had all come. Ross was out of breath but still nudged me to go collect Austin. I said, "Give me just a second, man." I peeked around the stone archway and watched this guy walk, not run, back up the street. I stood there and watched him walk all the way back up the hill, walk across the street, and get back into his SUV and drive away. I think that's when it fully hit me, of the very real situation we were just in, and the very real danger. That guy was there to get my brother. What's more, he probably would have, had we not made it to the stadium in time. The crowd spooked him, and most likely that's what saved my brother's life. We found Austin, but I made the whole gang wait until the game was over, and caught a ride with his folks. No burden on them, we lived right next door. I was shaken up for the rest of the night and for a couple of days after. This kind of town is the last place in the world you have thoughts about being snatched in. I also never told anyone. I never told my parents, I never told my brother. He's almost 20 years old now, and he could probably handle it, but I just never saw a reason to give him a complex about something that happened years ago. I also never told the police, and I have no idea what happened to that gold SUV guy. I don't know if he lived around here or far away. I don't know if he's been caught, went to jail, or if he's still out there somewhere. I do know for certain that he was there to kidnap my brother that day. I don't know what kind of dark plans he had for him, but then again, I don't care to dwell on it. I don't know if I did the right thing or the wrong thing, or just how close my brother came to whatever the SUV guy had in the works, but I don't care to dwell on that either. I can tell you, however, that there was once a time in my life in which I meaningfully uttered the phrase, "Thank God for sweaty rednecks." I just had a really strange experience. I live on the outskirts of a big city, and around here, there are quite a few train tracks. I mean, they're literally everywhere, as I live in a small town on the outside of the city that is on a port right on the Gulf. I was just chilling and listening to the trains go by. The usual loud horn, the way it glides across the tracks, that sort of thing, when I hear the light bells signaling for the cars to stop. A real quick background. I live 9 blocks from the tracks. That means I hear the trains often, and I know how long they last typically. Well, to give you an idea of that, just know, trains usually last between 1 to 5 minutes tops when passing through. This time, however, the train was going by non-stop for about an hour. Generally, I can tell how fast the train is going just by the sound, and this was going full steam ahead. Stranger still was I could still hear the train whistle long after it should have been way too far away to hear it. Eventually, I went inside to shower, and when I came back out, it was gone. It's all speculation, but I've pondered the possibility of a time loop or even being in a ghost train or something. The time loop might seem a stretch, but ghost trains are a legend long spoken of around here. If I ever hear anything that lasts that long again, I'll try to record it. For now, though, it'll remain a mystery to this small town on the outskirts of this big old train city. When I was little, like most kids, I was afraid of my closet. While most kids were afraid of their closets because of the boogeyman or simply because it was dark, I did have something living in my closet. Not sure what to call him, but he's been there since I was a kid, and I'm 27 now, and always been terrified of what my closet was as a result. I hesitate to say as much, but I believe the thing in my closet is some sort of male. To give you an idea of what I speak of, my story starts back when I was a kid in my childhood home in North Carolina. One night, I was sleeping when I awoke to the sound of my father's voice. At least, I thought it was my father calling me anyway. When I woke up, I looked towards my closet to see someone with yellow eyes staring back at me. I was naturally too afraid to move, and spent most of the night just staring silently into the closet. I was afraid if I so much as whispered, whatever was in the closet would kill me. The longer I stared at the yellow-eyed being, the brighter the yellow in the eyes got, This ended with him speaking my name in a very deep, male voice. A few seconds went by, and he spoke again. However, this time he didn't just speak my name. He asked me to come to him. Needless to say, I didn't move a muscle. It was when he finally told me he had something to show me that I screamed my head off till my dad came to my room. My dad did the typical father thing at this point and checked the closet for me.
"Nothing is there. Go back to sleep,"
he said before leaving the room. I, however, did not go back to sleep. I was too afraid to sleep. There was someone or something in my closet, and it kept speaking to me. How in the hell is a kid supposed to sleep with that going on? As the years went by, I sat, afraid, every night of this thing in my closet. We eventually moved, and I thought I'd finally be able to sleep properly again. Unfortunately, no matter where we went or how many times we moved, he was always there. He'd always say the same things and constantly try to lure me to my closet. Eventually, I moved out of my parents' home and into my husband's place. Once again, I'd believed I'd be okay. Yet again, he was there. He was always there, in the closet, trying to lure me in again. My husband tried to get whatever this guy was to leave, but he just wouldn't leave. I now have children of my own, and they've complained of seeing a man in their closet. The night they first mentioned him, I grabbed them and ran out of the room, at which point the thing in the closet came out. I never saw its face, but I can say it was tall, completely dressed in black. That was the last time I saw him. He's grown quiet, but I can still feel his gaze every night. What does he want? I'm not sure. I don't plan on ever finding out.
It was just before Mother's Day in 2005 when my story takes place. There was my wife, three sons, and I, and we had just gotten some great news about a place we were wanting to rent. The place was in Scotchman's Hill in Calgary, Alberta. It was three bedrooms and had three levels. There was the upstairs, the ground floor, and the basement. We moved in and been living there roughly for about 3 or 4 months, and we were relaxing on a very quiet and chill night. It was my first night off in a while. I worked the night shift, and it was about 2 in the morning when I was flipping through channels and stumbled upon Showcase. This is a movie channel that sometimes has nudity, and at the time, everyone was sleeping except me. I was just about to get comfortable when I get this feeling that I'm being watched. I can sense something there, so I just laid for a bit, watching TV, waiting. This is when, out of the corner of my eye, I see a dark figure. My heart skipped a beat, thinking it might have been one of the kids, and I didn't want them scarred for life seeing their old man like this. Acting natural, I sit up slowly. That's when I noticed a boy, by the stairs, and I'm thinking, which one of my sons is it? I position myself to launch off the couch and catch them if they're up sneaking around. Just as I get off the couch, I am frozen in place at what I see. There is a boy there, but it's not any of my sons. There's a pale boy with dark hair just staring at me. I sprint after him. He rushes up the stairs, at which point I rush up the stairs as well, hitting the light as I do, only to find when I round the corner that the boy has simply vanished. No doors opened. Nothing. He simply vanished. I decide to check in on my sons, in case I was just seeing things and they really were sneaking around, but every room I went into, they were sound asleep. No heavy breathing, which they would have been doing if they were running. They were in a clear and deep sleep. Nothing happened for the remainder of the night other than me sitting on the couch, in a stupor, trying to process what I had just witnessed. Eventually, I crashed, and when I got up in the morning, the boys and I had breakfast before leaving to the rink to play some hockey. This was the end of my encounter until we moved. Shortly after moving into a 4-bedroom place, my wife and I were talking to one another about our old place. The incident I had was eventually brought up, and when my wife heard it, her jaw hit the floor in shock. Confused, I asked her why she was so shocked. The wife then informed me that when I took the boy for hockey,
She was home alone doing laundry. She heard someone walking around the upstairs and assumed it was one of the kids that had come home. Looking over, she noticed a boy peeking from the basement at her. She didn't have a good view, so she thought once again it was one of our kids. She called out 3 times, but no one answered. Annoyed by being ignored, she headed upstairs. That's when she saw the same boy. He simply just vanished before her as well. We never spoke of the boy to one another again, though. I went on a camping trip with my 2 kids at a public campground over the summer. Unfortunately, my husband was unable to be with us due to work. The first night we were swimming in the pool because it was so hot. It was around 100 degrees and the tent was unbearable. After some time though, 3 older couples came into the pool and I thought it was best for us to move on. But later that evening, one of my kids and I were at a table in our campsite when I spot one of the men from the pool walking towards us. He asked me what part of the state we were from. I figured he had read my license plate. I told him we're from the east side. He then comments that he had worked there before. Didn't feel off about him, but I am cautious in giving short answers in hopes he realized I didn't want to talk anymore. I am camping alone with kids after all. I asked if he is a camper. He says he lives here and works here. Many of the slots are permanent renters. The next morning I am cooking breakfast in this little 3-sided kitchen for the tent campers with my youngest 6-year-old child. The 4th side was a waist-high flower box with only a 3-foot entrance into the kitchen. This man approaches me again. Because of the kitchen setup, I feel trapped. I do not want to interact with this man, and I am not okay with this setup. Here is our conversation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's not normal for a woman and her kids to be left alone at a camp.
Well, another kid had an activity and they were unavailable. Divide and conquer, I guess.
Yeah, I understand that.
And besides, I'm a better shot than my husband.
Okay, have a good day.
I nod as he walks away, and didn't see him after that, thankfully. I was visiting my cousins in their cabin in Idaho. At the time, I was 14 and the cabin in question sat on the outskirts of the town near a river in the woods. The cousins, whose cabin I was staying at, I won't use their real names, were Josh, who was 16, Anthony, who was 14, and Riley, who was 11. The first day there, we spent hanging out at local shops and just chilling at the YMCA center in town. The second day, however, was far different, and when the trip took a very unexpected change. We spent much of the morning at the cabin, but at 3, we decided to make it uphill and hike. We packed up and headed out by 3:30. Myself, Anthony, and Riley carried pocket knives while Josh carried a 9mm handgun. You have to understand, bears and wolves were pretty common in the area. We walked down a dirt road in front of the house, across a bridge that took us across the river before proceeding down the road till we were directly on the other side of the river from the cabin. We wanted to be sure it was an easy trip back and we didn't want to get lost. Using roots on an embankment, we soon scaled a 15-foot hill before heading into the forest. It usually takes about 2 hours to reach the summit of our destination, as there aren't any trails in the forest itself. It was probably about a half hour into walking through the forest that I noticed there was no sound whatsoever. No animals, nothing. A few moments later, we came upon a multitude of deer corpses. The thing had been sliced clean in half and intestines were thrown all over. Its head was missing. It was then we looked up that we spotted the missing head hanging from a tree branch. The aforementioned intestines were also hanging off the tree. They were spread like Christmas lights. This was the moment we knew we probably should have left the forest. But having come so far, we decided not to speak on what we witnessed and continued our ascent of the hill that we originally set out to climb. The sun was setting and we were eating some snacks a little later that day when I noticed a set of eyes and watching us in the distance. The eyes looked to be about 7 feet off the ground, and they glowed this weird kind of red. I was just about to point them out when they vanished. Being as I still remembered the deer, I was even more paranoid about being out here than I was before. As time went on, we finished our climb and began the walk back. At this point it was nighttime, so we pulled our flashlights out to see. It was about halfway back to the cabin when we heard a loud snap to the left of us. The whole way had been silent to this point. No animal sounds or anything. So, this made us all jump. Turning our flashlights in the direction of the sound we witnessed, a sight I will never forget. There was a figure that was emaciated. It stood about 7 feet tall and had glowing red eyes. It was the figure from earlier, but now I could clearly see it in its terrifying entirety. Gazing at its razor-sharp teeth, I noticed they had fresh blood on them. This was when the thing let out a horrifying scream that sounded like a mix between a bear and a panther. Josh pulled out his pistol and fired off 2 shots, hitting this monstrosity in the shoulder as well as his leg. This made the creature scream and rush off into the trees. We all turned and sprinted down the hill, at which point the thing regained its senses and started coming after us again, sprinting so fast it was gaining on us, even with a wounded leg. The thing only stopped when we broke the tree line and jumped into the freezing river, soon swimming across. When we finally got across and looked back, the creature was staring at us from the tree line, a malicious look on its face. We ran inside, terrified soon after. I don't know about any of my other friends, but I'll never go back to that forest. I'm getting ready to move from this small town as well. I don't want to live in a place like that, with so few neighbors and so few residents here. There's a good chance I'll run into it again. I'm a female in my late 20s, and I live in a small town in the mountains of Virginia. Things here are very quiet and people are extra friendly. I wouldn't have expected something like this to happen here. My house is old but quite updated. There's just one thing that's always sort of bothered me. There's a large window inside the shower. I did buy some frosted vinyl stick-on stuff that makes it to where you can't see through it. But being naked and vulnerable with a large window right next to you, it just never sits well with me. Due to this, I try to shower during the day. Well, one cold snowy day in December, I took a long nap after dinner and woke up around 10 o'clock at night. I needed a shower, and to do this, I had to do it during the night. To be honest, I wasn't even thinking of the window at the time because I was so out of it. I ran the water and stepped in. As I was washing, I could feel the cold from the window, which reminded me of its presence, and I began to feel uneasy. Like I said, I rarely showered at night. Well, as I'm rinsing my hair, I suddenly hear 3 long, strong knocks. Bam! 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 My God, I was so startled. My heart jumped, and I opened my eyes. I just froze. Did that really just happen? I told myself I was crazy. Then, it did it again. Bam! 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 Someone, or something, was knocking on my window. I reached out for my towel, ran into my bedroom and locked the door. I called my sister who lived on the other side of town. Her and her boyfriend came over as quickly as they could. Her boyfriend had brought a shotgun with him, and a headlamp as he walked around the perimeter of the house yelling out, "I have a loaded gun! Anybody there?" He didn't see anybody. But like I said, there was snow on the ground, and there were footprints leading away from my driveway all around the house to my bathroom window. They didn't go anywhere else, so whatever it was must have retraced their footsteps and back around. I never found out who it was or what it was. I nailed the window shut since I only shower during the day now. Small towns don't always mean safe towns. I learned that the hard way.
I grew up in one of those tiny towns around Texas Hill Country in Bandera County. As a kid back in the late 70s, I used to play with a neighbor lady's grandson, who would come down every summer from Baltimore, Maryland, to stay with her for 2 weeks. He was a real big city boy. Everybody pretty much has a rural resident area where all residents connect quickly with the woods. One afternoon, I went to visit the neighbor boy who was there visiting. He was a bit spoiled and was allowed to stay up till 4 or 5 a.m. every night, watching TV, and then sleep till early afternoon the next day. But this day, he was freaked out because he told me that the night before, at around 3 a.m., he had happened to look out his window and saw a huge man-thing walk very briskly down another neighbor's long gravel driveway and disappear into the darkness and woods behind their house. This neighbor had a streetlight on their carport that lit the whole area at night where he saw the thing. His view was unobstructed and about 75 yards away. He said the thing covered 50 or 60 yards within a few seconds. When I first began to believe him was when we were dirt biking a day or two later down a long, desolate county road, unpaved on my dirt bike. He kept asking me, he was on the back of my dirt bike, when we were going to turn around. We got to the end of the road, and I killed the bike and pretended it wouldn't start. This poor kid was screaming at the brush and scanning it like he was scared to death. Something would come out and get us. He was panicking and crying and saying that we had to get out of there because we have these things roaming around. Seeing him so freaked out got me a little freaked out too, and we left. We were both about 11 or 12 at the time. I now live in San Antonio. Last winter, our 10 o'clock news had a brief blurb about two men witnessing either one or two Sasquatch chasing deer off Highway 51, which is a little connector road that runs between the northwest outskirts of town. This subject is fascinating. I learned after reading a lot of stories that they don't just dwell in tall forests. There are a lot of sightings in low brush county. I wish I had a lot more info about the deer chasing incident.
When I was 19, my boyfriend at the time lived just 3 blocks away from me. I was on 69th and he lived on 66. He would usually drive to my house to pick me up once I got home from work around 9:30 p.m. But this particular night, I insisted that I walk. It took some convincing. I have Mace, it's just 3 blocks, it's summer and there's still people out, blah blah blah. But he finally agreed. My mom would always tell me, if I'm walking alone at night, to walk in the street. So that's what I did. I had my pepper spray in my hand, ready to be sprayed, and my keys between my fingers, ready to gouge an eye out if need be. All is fine. I get to the 66th Street, and I put on my cell phone to call my friend. He doesn't answer. No big deal. I turn down the street that his house is on and instantly get a bad vibe. Yes, it's late, but as I mentioned before, it's summer and people are usually out. His street was eerily quiet and desolate. Then I notice an older man walking on the same side of the street as me, in my direction. I don't know what it was about, but my heart started pounding when I saw him. We were both about the same distance from my boyfriend's house, so I quickened my step to make it there first. He's in front of the neighbor's house when I run up to my boyfriend's steps, and I can hear him mumbling strange things. He was talking to someone about the pretty girl they just saw and how she would be a good one. I wanted to piss my pants. I am banging on my boyfriend's door and ringing the doorbell nonstop, and nobody is answering. I'm calling his cell phone back and back, but still no answer. The man walks by the house and I can see him stop, right before the next house. He starts walking backwards until he gets to the front step of my boyfriend's house and stops to look at me. I try not to look scared, like a little girl, and I calmly say, "Can I help you, sir?" I shit you not. He gave me the creepiest smile and slowly started up the stairs towards me, all the while mumbling things that I couldn't understand. The layout of the front house is 4 steps, a landing that leads onto the patio, and 5 more steps to the landing to the front door. I say, "Don't make me mace you, old man." I laugh, thinking about it now, but nope, that didn't stop him. He kept that creepy smile and mumbling, and he's on the first landing now. I'm holding my mace, watching him and almost kicking my boyfriend's door in when, by chance, I try the knob and thank whoever is watching over me that it was unlocked. I rushed in and locked the door. I go to run to my boyfriend's room and he's coming down the stairs saying he fell asleep. Meanwhile, I'm going ballistic about this creepy old man and how neglectful it was for him to leave me outside at this hour. I know, I insisted. Not to mention he was upstairs asleep with the front door unlocked. At night. Anyway, he goes outside and the old man is nowhere to be found.
I was a pretty brave person when I was younger, or maybe I had that sense of invincibility that comes with youth. I survived some things. A stalker who pursued my sister and I for over 1.5 years, being sexually assaulted, 2 house fires, and growing up in a house that I swear was haunted. Not in that Disney way, either. I'm talking about torture chamber in the basement and strange things going on. Anyway, I suppose, looking back, that having been through all of that made me a little like either I was sort of invincible or maybe I just assumed that I had gotten all the bad stuff out of the way and nothing else would happen. Whatever it was, I learned to know better. When I was 17, I didn't have a driver's license. In fact, I was 36 before I did. I walked most places and occasionally catching rides with friends and less occasionally hitchhiking. The night in question was one of those seldom seen occasions where I decided to hitchhike. Having worked late and being too exhausted to walk, now, most of the time when I hitch a ride, I wouldn't get a car with a lone man, only a woman or, rarely, men with a wife or girlfriend and or kids in the car. This night, though, cars were few and far between and it was cold, and really, if I'm being perfectly frank, when he pulled over, I took a good look at him and figured I could take him if he tried anything. He was on the slender side and had a strange frailness about him, and even though he looked healthy enough. I got into the car after we agreed on a destination. We exchanged names and I warmed my fingers in front of the heating vent. He spoke quietly, asking a few questions along the lines of what I was doing and how long I lived here. He said he'd only been here a couple of months, but found it beautiful and hoped he could find happiness there. That comment struck me as a little odd, but I brushed it off. It began to snow and the road quickly began slippery, so he slowed and kept his eyes straight out the windshield, driving silently. I was okay with that, as small talk was never my forte. About 10 minutes later, I noticed a car near the intersection where we were approaching. It seemed to be sliding, so I said, "Watch out." He immediately hit the gas, shooting through the intersection and burst with it. "Don't ever scream at me." Needless to say, I was taken back. I said, "Look, this is close enough, just pull over and I'll get out here." He didn't seem to hear me. "Richard, did you hear me? I said you can pull over and let me out." No response, he was just staring straight ahead, driving faster now than he had been since it began to snow. To say I was scared was something that couldn't cover the depth of fear that began to arise in me. I didn't know if I should stay quiet or speak, but I was damn sure not going to yell out after his outburst. After about 1 mile, he began to mumble under his breath. I couldn't quite make out what he was saying, but I assumed he was speaking to me, so I said, I couldn't hear you." He began to speak quietly and rapidly, saying things like, "You're always yelling at me. I told you that time and time again. I don't appreciate being yelled at. What do you do? Do you even listen? No, I'm done listening to you. Do you hear that?" I was at a complete loss. I didn't know what to say in response or if I should say anything at all. I contemplated just jumping out of the car, but mixed that idea when I realized the door was locked. There was just a silver-lined hole where the lock should have been. I started to cry and debate with myself about causing an accident by grabbing the wheel and hoping for the best. At least I figured there was a chance that I'd survive that. When he suddenly looked at me for the first time since I'd gotten in the car, he blinked several times, rapidly, and then slowed the car, pulling into a gas station. I waited to see if he unlocked the doors, not waiting to say anything to set him off again. After a minute or two, he quietly said, "I think I better let you out here," and he hit the button to open the locks. I wasn't about to hesitate. I jumped out of the car as if it were on fire. I was about to turn and walk to the gas station when he called my name. He looked at me, damn sad, and I hesitated. He apologized and said he was sorry if he frightened me, that he never would have harmed me, and he asked if I would be able to get home okay. I said I would and closed the door. He began to pull out of the gas station lot, but stopped suddenly. He just sat there for a couple of moments, his head down. I froze, wondering what the hell he was up to, and was about to run into the station, but he opened his window and yelled at me, waving something in his hand, my hat. I left it on his seat. I wearily approached the side of his car, and he handed it to me, apologizing again. I didn't know what else to say. I just said thanks. I watched as he drove off, making sure he was out of sight before moving on so he wouldn't know which direction I was heading. I decided to go to a friend's instead of home. As I walked, I went to put my hat back on, and out fell a piece of paper folded in was a $100 bill. He said, "I'm sorry, please take a cab, and don't hitchhike anymore tonight." I didn't, in fact. It was the last time I ever hitchhiked or rode alone.
Thanks for watching these allegedly true, scary stories from small towns. These were some of my favorite ones that I have ever read so far in this series. Unfortunately, today I was not able to get a new video out for you, so I hope you enjoyed all these. I know you've probably heard some of them before. Before we end this and we get to our new videos as usual, I just want to take one more minute to talk about author Michael Welland's new book, Within the Walls. I'm telling you guys are really going to like this book. It really is one heck of a thriller. If you guys are fans of real-life horror that could happen to anybody at any moment, be sure to check out this book. It's only $2.50. You can find the link in the description down below. Supporting people in the horror community, whether it be authors, narrators, YouTubers, whatever it be, helps us all out in the long run. So, if you guys are interested in helping us out, please check out that book. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.